In Michigan, we're probably 50-50 between wholesaling and wholetailing. And I would say out of our wholetails, probably 50% of those were selling on a land contract.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. This is Javier Hinojo, your host, The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. I am with Martin Bolzaier. He is in Arizona. He flips houses. He's an entrepreneur. I heard that he could beat Bruce Lee, karate match, and at least Chuck Norris. He could probably beat him up. His father was an immigrant, came here with 40 bucks in his pocket. And, you know, he was, you did IT, right? You were in IT?
Actually, I was an electrical engineer.
Yeah. And you know, he's out in Arizona, right? Which is Phoenix, one of the hottest markets in the country. He's been like that for a long time. Is insane. He also does some in South Florida and in Michigan.
Yeah.
So Martin, why don't you introduce yourself? I know I can sit here for half an hour and talk about everything you've done, but I really want to talk about how you could have beat Chuck Norris in a karate match.
Well, that's very flattering. I mean, particularly the Bruce Lee reference. I don't even think I belong in the same universe as Bruce Lee. That guy was amazing. But I do have a small little bit of claim to fame. My sport was judo. And I was on the 2000 and 2004 Olympic teams for judo as a heavyweight. And so it's a bit of a different sport than karate. So I don't think I can hold a candle. I know I can't hold a candle to Bruce Lee, but I've had some success there. It was a real privilege to represent our country as an Olympian. And that was a lot of fun. It was an exciting, fun time in my life. Got to travel a lot, see the world, meet a lot of really cool athletes. And yeah, it was, but it was also a long time ago now. It's hard to believe that my first Olympics was 20 years ago, 21 actually. So, but I love the Olympics. I'm excited about Tokyo coming up this summer. Obviously, it's near and dear to my heart having been there. And I'd love to go back some time as a spectator. But anyway, enough about the Olympics and me. Let's see, what else? I'm married. I got four kids. Oldest going to go into college next year. And so staying active in real estate to pay the bills.
There you go, man. Awesome. So that's pretty cool. You have an Olympian on the podcast, which is super cool. And I know, what's the weight for heavyweight?
It's actually 100 kilos and over, which translates to about 220 pounds and over. So There's no upper weight limit cap like there is for wrestling. So there's some pretty big dudes. Think of guys that play in the NFL here in the States. Overseas, there's no NFL. They're doing a sport like judo. Yeah. And so I was actually the small guy out there. A lot of times people think I'm big because I'm 6'1". I weigh 260 right now. But man, there's some really big men out there.
All right. This is scary because I'm like in a good hair day. Like my hair's good. And the beginning of this year, I was around 218 pounds. So I'll be a heavyweight. I'd be like fighting somebody about 6'5". That would be very interesting. That would not be very interesting. Anyways. But well, Martin, I appreciate you being on the show. So tell me a little bit about what you do as far as your real estate. I mean, what did your business look like? What do you do? And what do you focus on?
So my company's called The Trusted Home Buyer, and I think probably like a lot of investors out there, we do a lot of direct-to-seller marketing. I built my business in the probate niche, and just trying to find deals back in the doldrums. Back in 2008 is when I started, and you know, there's plenty of properties out there, but I recognized, I mean, well, that I was so smart, but everybody always says you make money when you buy. And I was buying at the trustee sale, but it started to get really competitive, and I wanted to find ways to have an edge. And so I stumbled into somebody who was talking about probate and figured that out. Built a really, really great business. That was the foundation of my business. Really learned to understand people's pain, how to solve their problems, how to deliver a reliable service. And so that was probably the first 5 or 6 years of my business was the probate market. And since then, we've expanded into all sorts of other, you know, direct-to-seller channels. But probate was the key for me.
All right. So let me ask you this question, right? So you said 2008, that's what stood out to me when the market was pretty much down, right?
Yeah.
Now we're 2000, like summer 2021, and it's like no inventory out there. Let me ask you this. Have you seen any of the houses that you flipped, like flipped again and flipped again or go for sale a couple of times since 2008?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's kind of funny. Sometimes I even get a call from somebody who is selling a house, and it was a house that it's only happened a couple of times, but selling a house that I'd actually flipped years prior. So that's always kind of fun. What's kind of sad though, is to see the condition of the house. You put in all this money and time and love into these houses, and they're not always treated the best. But yeah, it's happened. Another instance comes to mind of a house that we flipped. It was actually one of the very first houses I bought. And it was really challenging because I bought these houses. I got started in July of 08, bought five houses out right out of the gate. And then in September of 08 is when Lehman and the whole market crashed. And so these houses I paid $65,000, $75,000 for were now worth $25,000, $35,000. And so I had to learn to get creative. But anyway, so I had a tenant with an option to buy one of these houses, worked with her for about a year to get her credit restored so that she could pay or she could buy this house outright and qualify for an FHA loan. And it's just really sad because about, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months after she bought the house, we've got her through that whole process. It went into default, went into foreclosure, and is back out there. But unfortunately it happens, but that's the world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, yes, that's the unfortunate situation. That's 2008 market was pretty hot. And then, we just had a real estate crisis. It was a financial real estate related. So it crashed pretty bad. Inventory. I mean, everybody can get a loan. It was fairly easy. So how do you compare that to we don't know if we're at the peak a year ago. I mean, it keeps going higher. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball, but let's just say we're at the peak. How does a real estate market compare to when you got started in 2008 when it was really good to and right now? What do you see similarities and what do you see that's different?
Well, to be clear, when I got started in 2008, the market was already down.
Okay.
So it was, these houses I was buying for $75,000, $85,000 had been previously selling for $200,000. So the market had already dropped quite a bit. It was soft. But so I wasn't active in the Phoenix market back when it was really, really hot. But from what I'm told and from other investors I've spoken to, and one of the big differences, inventory, there was a lot more inventory then. And what was driving the activity was speculation. People were buying houses and literally closing on a house and putting $40,000 or $50,000 in their pocket because banks were overfunding the purchase. There's all sorts of crazy stuff happening with negative amortizing loans and a lot of things that we're not seeing today. So I don't think, so even though the market's really hot today, I don't think it's the same market. I think the people that are driving the market now are people who actually want to live in these houses. So I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think it's good that the people are buying want to live in houses. I don't think this market is good or healthy. I think it's a result of a lot of really unhealthy financial decisions our government makes, but that's probably beyond the scope of this podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a couple of good points you make there, right? And we can go down that rabbit hole, but we'll be here for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
For a while. So you were talking about probate. That was kind of your niche at the beginning. And now, so 2021, I talked to a lot of folks and, inventory is so low. What's your favorite way of finding your properties now?
Actually, believe it or not, my favorite way of finding property right now is Facebook. And I never thought I would say that because Facebook I've always struggled with. Never had really good results. But over the last year, we've really turned the ship around. I think one of the key difference makers is I have a really sharp marketing gal. We've really been working on our brand and just creating video content that we're using as paid ads in Facebook that just relates to people. One of my favorite things about Facebook is that when somebody taps on my ad and submits their information, I reached out to them in a way. So versus pay-per-click, where they're often going from one person to the next and filling out two or three or four web forms. And so now you're getting shopped out from the get-go. But on Facebook, I'm finding that a lot of these leads, they connect or they resonate with our story or what I'm talking about in the video, and they want to actually talk to us. And so our conversion ratio has been really good on Facebook lately.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Facebook paid ads, especially if you had the right video. I know I was on your website and everybody go ahead and go to Martin's website. Go ahead and tell what your website is.
So people can go. It's thetrustedhomebuyer.com.
Right. And then I saw his video that people can go out and see. And man, I want to sell my house to this guy. He seems a nice guy and trustworthy, likable. And if that's the kind of content, I haven't seen the content you put out on Facebook, but if it's anything close to that, I could definitely see why you're getting a lot of those leads, from people that resonate, that you connect with just because of your ad.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point too. I don't think it's just the ad. I think we have the branding behind it with the website, that there's content there that people are connecting with. We have great reviews and we have some good content, and we're really actively working to make even better content. The thing I like about it is it's been a major investment of time and effort. But we end up attracting is people that are looking for somebody they can trust. And because they're concerned about all the people that are spamming them on text messages, spamming cold calls, all that kind of stuff. And I know a lot of investors do it and it works well for them. It's just not something that we do. And this is a way we differentiate ourselves. People are finding us. They like our message. And so I love it when I go on an appointment and our prospect is like, you know what? I checked you guys out. I watched your video. We loved it. You know, we really want to do business with you. When somebody starts out an appointment with that, you know, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, for sure. And you're the one going out to the appointments or do you have an acquisition person?
So it depends on the market. I still am running appointments here in Phoenix just because I love it. But I probably actually just had that conversation this morning with my sales manager. We really do need to bring in, we need to replace me in that role. I just have been loath to give it up because I feel more in tune with the market, what's going on when I'm out there belly to belly and talking to people. So it's still doing it.
Well, that's good. That's good. You're still going out there. They see the person in the video. So, you know, it's working for you well right now. And as long as you enjoy it, right? It's not holding you back anywhere else. So
that's just it. I probably ought to put my focus on growing the business and the company. And so it's probably going to change here in the near future.
So getting properties, you know, under contract, you show up, you get under contract, you go ahead and, you know, you buy it, you close on it. I mean, what are you doing with them? Are you flipping them? Are you keeping some for rentals? What's your exit strategy?
Yeah. So I know the most common exit strategy out there and probably most popular that most people talk about is wholesaling. We will wholesale occasionally, but we're not really a wholesaling shop. Generally, I'm looking for the motivated seller that wants to close quick or wants to close and then rent back for a few months, which, by the way, that's been really working for us in this market too. My last few deals, we bought 3-4 months ago. And because of the appreciating market, by the time they move out, you know, we've enjoyed another, I mean, ridiculous amount of appreciation, you would think, for 3 months. You think, well, 3 months, who cares? But the last 3 months have been about 15%, believe it or not, in Phoenix. I know it's crazy. So anyway, some of these creative solutions that require closing on the deal is what it's been our bread and butter. And once we do close on it, we'll either, depending on the price point, we'll fix and flip. Or I do try to keep as many as I can in my rental portfolio. And so I'm a big believer in tax advantaged investing. And so I utilize self-directed IRA funds whenever possible to buy property. And I want to make sure that I don't want to just flip in my IRA. The IRS doesn't like that. So if I have a really great buy and hold, I'll put in my IRA whenever possible. It may happen occasionally where we buy something in our IRA and we end up selling it in less than a year. But for the most part, that's what we try to do. We try to keep something that we'd like to hold for a year or more in the IRA. And then the flips will run through the active business. The active business owns some rentals as well. But yeah, sorry, I'm kind of rambling a little bit.
Oh, it's okay.
One of my other favorite strategies is we'll buy sub two. And a lot of investors, there's a lot of people talk about it. I don't see a lot of people actually executing on it. Some people do. But there's people out there that they don't have enough equity to sell traditionally. So we'll buy sub two and then we'll sell with a wrap. And that can create instant equity because the buyers are so desperate, they're willing to pay a premium at a higher interest rate and at a higher purchase price. And so you can take a deal with no equity and create a decent spread with really no turnaround time at all. We can sell those usually in 2 seconds flat.
Yeah. So a sub two basically is you're just taking over somebody's mortgage and then you turn around and you sell it. You kind of do a second mortgage and you sell it to somebody else.
That's correct.
Kind of big picture. You really got to know how to do it. Make sure you do it, you know, the right way. You talk to some professionals. And if you guys just had to do it, don't just go out and do it. Make sure it's done properly.
Yeah, I would second that. We've invested quite a bit of time and money in our document packet and the think steps that we take, because there's some risks to that approach, some steps that we take to eliminate or to limit, at least. You can't eliminate it entirely, but to really limit the risk for buying sub two. But it is a great strategy. It can help some people that the traditional market isn't helping.
Yeah, I actually met the very first person. He's actually here. I actually interviewed in my podcast. His name's Keith. He's here in Raleigh, North Carolina, that actually had the sale on due clause called in by the bank.
Oh, really?
That's the first person ever that I've heard that. And it happened.
Yeah, that's pretty unusual. It's families never do, but.
Yeah. And it was a certain situation. I think it was like an insurance claim or something like that. And that somebody who was at the bank handling the transaction noticed the change of the ownership and they called the loan. So it was kind of it was awkward. I think it was an insurance claim or something was going on that it was already in the radar of the bank.
Gotcha.
Somebody had it on their desk. So anyways, that's one of the things that could happen and is really rare. And if you guys haven't heard it out there, it actually has. And I know somebody who it happened to. another question. So you're flipping, or you're doing some flipping or wholesaling or holding in Florida and in Michigan. What's the strategy there?
In Michigan, we're probably 50-50 between wholesaling and wholetailing. And I would say out of our wholetails, probably 50% of those we're selling on a land contract, which is really popular in Michigan. There's a lot of rural areas. So when we get rural sellers, we'll make them two offers. We'll make them a low cash offer because it's rural and just the number of buyers is much less. We'll also make them a more aggressive, but a seller financed offer. And if they, depending on the amount of the cash offer, either way, we may end up selling it on a land contract, because those rural properties, we can sell a land contract, but they're very difficult to sell for cash. Investors stay out of those areas. But we found that with those strategies, we can sell these deals and still turn them quickly and make a profit.
All right. Explain to me a little bit about a land contract. How does that work?
Well, land contract is just another term for seller financing. The big difference is a land contract is more like buying a car. When you buy a car with financing, you don't hold title. The bank holds the title, or the lender holds the title. Same thing with a land contract. When we sell a land contract, we stay on title. Our buyer does not get the title until they pay off the terms of our contract with them. And theoretically, it makes the process to get the property back easier than foreclosure if they don't pay. But you'd need to talk to a lawyer about that in your state. I've been told different things, but that's not really the reason we do it. It's relatively simple to do. And the terminology is just so familiar to people in that area. Everybody in that area knows what a land contract is. And it just makes it, so the barrier, the resistance to that concept is very, very low. In fact, people love land contracts, and it just gives us a whole new exit strategy.
Oh, that's super cool. That's very, very, very creative, even on a different state, and you're in Arizona. So super cool. Yeah. I appreciate that. So I know you're talking about branding a little bit earlier, and I believe you got a great brand. And I know we were talking even before the push record. Possibly, I know you're not doing it now, but you talked about franchising or maybe partnering up, in the future with like an operator in a market you want to be in. And kind of tell me a little bit about that you might have planned.
Sure. So, and it's actually more than having planned. My activity in Michigan and in Florida are with a partner in each market. And so it's a little bit different than a franchise, because I'm a full-on partner and we provide a lot of resources to our partner, our brand and experience and funding and the tools and resources. And so the ideal partner for me is somebody that knows their market, but may not be so much into systems and brand and all of that. And so we bring that piece of the equation. And what we find is that, if you ever heard the saying, but one Clydesdale can pull 2,000 pounds, but two Clydesdales can pull 8,000.
Yeah.
So we can accomplish, 4, 5X, or I think even 10X more together than one person would alone. And so by partnering together, we're having a lot of success. I know we've got a great brand, and this allows me to really focus on my brand and building the resources and tools and the marketing, like that Facebook marketing campaign we were talking about. And my local partner, all they have to do is go out, run the appointments, pick up the deal, and market the deal. And our inside sales team and everything will handle everything up until handing that partner the opportunities. And so it's been working really well. We want to refine and tune some things a little bit, but we're definitely looking to grow that side of our business and add a few more partners by the end of the year.
Oh, that's awesome. That's super cool. So I know it's kind of summertime, so you're going to add a few partners at the end of the year. Any particular markets?
I'm more interested in the person than I am the market. I think there's opportunity in every single market if it's the right person. And so I'm interested in character. Obviously, I'm interested in skill and ability and all of that as well. And if I had my druthers, I really like mid-sized markets. There's nothing wrong with large markets, and I won't say no to it. But mid-sized markets like Boise, Idaho, or, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or things like that, where the big boys, Zillow, Offerpad, Opendoor, they're not there yet. I think there's more opportunity for us to establish our place. And we've had a lot of success because that's the size of market that we've got in Western Michigan, for example, and we've been doing extremely well there.
Oh, that's awesome. Super cool. I'm super excited for you. Best to you. I know you're already doing it in two different states, so why not do it in 10, right? If it's working well and working everything else, that'd be awesome. It's a good way to get out the branding. And it just makes it easier too on somebody on the end, right? They can just, I just want to do the business. But like you said, they don't have all the systems and processes and the marketing down. And So that's definitely good. It's a good partnership. It's got to be a good fit. Awesome. Well, I got another question for you. I usually ask this to all the guests is what is the biggest mistake that you've made and how could you maybe avoid it?
That's a great question. And I had an answer for you that I really wanted to tell you earlier. And now it's escaping me for a second. And I'm just kicking myself because I knew it was coming. It's like, oh, what is it? So would you mind if we move on to the next question? Let me
come back. We can come back. We come back and edit this out if you need a couple minutes. But, you know, anything could be about partners or it can be about partners or, you know, flipping houses or, I don't know, cash flow. I don't know, whatever.
I know what I wanted to say.
All right. Perfect. We'll go back on.
All right. Yeah. So actually the biggest mistake I made is the last couple of years, I thought the market, I thought the market was at the top. And over the last 13 years, I've, you know, busted my butt, built up a pretty good sized rental portfolio. And I made the decision, I'm going to start selling my rentals. And so I sold 2/3 of my rental portfolio in 2019 and early 2020. And when I say it's the biggest mistake I made is because I've never seen so much appreciation in 1 year as this last year. And I missed the boat with 2/3 of my, you know, 2/3 of my portfolio. So it really hurts because that amount of market appreciation over that number of rentals was pretty. But I mean, there's really the other follow up of your question is what do you do about it, right? How do you avoid that in the future? Honestly, Javier, I don't know if there is really any avoiding it. There's no way to have known that this was coming. I think it was a good decision at the time. It's just events conspired to create this really incredible run of inflation that we're seeing right now. So, but that's probably the biggest financial mistake I've made in my life. But on the upside, it put a bunch of cash in my pocket and we're in a good position if there are opportunities out there.
Yeah, for sure. Right. You know, I guess when you make a decision like that, you got to think about like, okay, if I sell today, like if you're going to sell a stock, right? If I sell my stock today and am I happy with my gains, if it happens to go 50% up tomorrow, am I going to cry about it? And you're like, no, if it goes up 50%, I'm okay with it. I want this money or I want to sell it today. I mean, that's probably the best way of doing it, but man, it's tough, right? Especially when it goes against you. Hey, if the market would have crashed, it'd been like, yes. At the end of the day, right? We're still all emotional beings. So, but you can't go wrong with some cash in your pocket.
That's right.
Can't go wrong cash in your pocket. So appreciate that, Martin. You know, you'd be just being honest, like, hey, you should have hold on to it, but you're still in a good spot. You still got 1/3 of those rentals.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, right? I mean, don't for sure shed any tears for us. I know that.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. All right. So this brings us to my favorite part of the show, which is the naked truth roulette, right? I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to ask you 4 random questions. And I'm not going to give you any passes, Martin. You're going to have to answer each one.
All right.
Here we go. And we're going to spin it. Let's see what the first question is. Let's roll. First question, the naked truth roulette for Martin out of Phoenix, Arizona. Let's see what we got. All right. Would you rather be a hero or a villain for a day?
Oh, wow. That's actually a good question. I'm going to have to go with hero.
All right. Awesome. Okay. Hero for the day. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Let's go. Question number 2. Let's see what we got, what this wheel has for you today. All right. Okay. So if you had to meet somebody in an elevator and you can only do one of these 2 things, your number 1 is either do your hair or brush your teeth. What would you do?
Well, if you haven't seen me lately, I'm going to have to go with brush your teeth.
I figured this is going to be a little bit easy for you, but okay. Brush your teeth. You know what? Most people say do their hair. I'm like, man, that's, you know,
but when you don't have any, it makes it an easy question.
I think I brush my teeth. I don't care if my hair was all over the place. I definitely brush my teeth. All right. Let's see what we got here. Oh, have you ever cried at a movie?
I have. I'm trying to remember which one.
Were your kids there?
I think so.
It's probably one of those Disney movies that was make you cry.
I don't think it was a Disney movie.
But you have cried. All right. You don't know the movie, but you have cried. That's the question. You have cried in the movie. Okay.
I have.
That's awesome. Okay. I think everybody's cried at a movie. All right. You got another question coming up. Let's go. Oh, yeah. I would actually be interested in knowing this. What is your favorite band, song, artist?
Oh, boy. Well, it depends what I'm doing.
All right, say you're working out. Say you're working
out. When I'm working out, it's Metallica all the way.
Oh man, that's gonna get you. All right, say you're driving in the car, you're not listening to my podcast or an audiobook. What are you listening to?
Oh, not a podcast or an audiobook.
Yeah, and no kids in the car. You're by yourself.
Well, okay. So, well, it would be a podcast or an audiobook, but you're saying it's got to be music.
Yep.
Okay. I like the Eagles, that type of genre.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. All right, Martin. Well, you survived the Naked Truth Roulette. It wasn't too bad. It actually had some pretty easy questions. Some pretty easy questions. You know, I didn't want to make you too nervous.
Oh, you didn't make me nervous. It was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, awesome.
And well, actually, I remember the movie that I cried, if you want to know.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah, for sure. Which one was it?
So might be one that would kind of surprise you, but Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire, okay.
Part of it is because I watched it when I was a kid, and it moved me so much when I was a kid, and I watched it with my kids. But man, when people accomplish great things, and anyway, it just chokes me up. I love that movie. I love how Eric Little, if you haven't watched it, you know, he's a great runner from about 100 years ago, and what he sacrificed, he was willing to put his dreams aside because of what he believed was right. And it's a phenomenal movie. And anyway,
yeah, super cool. Yeah, Chariots of Fire. Yeah, it's definitely should be on a watch list with your kids. There's a lot of movies I watch with my kids. I watch a lot of Tom Hanks movies with my kids. They're like, Dad, come on, Dad, such an old movie. But I watch them and they love them. They love all the Tom Hanks movies.
Yeah.
Especially the ones in the 80s and things like that. They're just great. And it's good when I'm watching it with my kids. Because I remember when I was 8 watching these movies or 12. And now my kids were, when they were that age, it was just kind of cool to just watch those movies with them and watch their face, see them enjoy the movie as well. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, well, Martin, appreciate your time. We talked a little bit about what you do. You flip, you know, you do a little bit of wholesale, some wholesaling. You started off by, you know, doing probates. You do some land contracts and subject to. You also talk about your exit strategy. You flip some and you keep some for rental. And you are looking here in the near future for some other partners in other markets, right? And folks can reach out to you. What's the best way if somebody wants to get a hold of you, social media or email?
Either would be fine. Social media is always great. Love to get interaction on social media. You can fill out a contact us form on my website if you're over there, or you can just send me an email to martin@thetrustedhomebuyer.com.
Yeah, we'll make sure that's on the show notes for you. He also survived the Naked Truth Roulette. I really appreciate your time and I love the energy. An Olympian here on the show. Thank you so much, Martin. I'm your host, Javier Hinojo. Don't lose your shirt.
Time consuming, it can be very scary. It could be like trying to get somewhere without a roadmap. So that's why I created this due diligence list when I buy a property. When I buy an apartment building, or even a mobile home park, you can use it for mostly pretty much any commercial property. But this one specifically is for a multifamily. It could be a 6-unit. It could be a 600 unit. You can use it for what you like. So go ahead and sign up, put your name, email. I'll send you the free link to my due diligence. This is what I've used to buy hundreds and hundreds of units, if not thousands of units. So sign up, you get my link. You get an Excel sheet as well. And also we use the software, project management software, monday.com. Feel free to sign up for a free trial. I do have an affiliate link. You don't pay any extra. They just pay me a small fee. Don't have to use it. You have the Excel spreadsheet, but if you use monday.com, it's actually a lot better, a lot smoother, a lot prettier, and you can do a whole bunch of other stuff. There's even a video there I created in the link. So check the link, sign up, and this is my giveaway for you guys. Thank you so much. Take care.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.